Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The most hated word in fantasy football. It's regression. The term that often exists in this hypothetical of how a player who was really good last year should have actually scored fewer points for a fantasy team, or conversely, a player who often frustrated you with so many down weeks and bad performances may have in fact just been unlucky. So Hayden, you often bring up regression both positively and negatively. Before we do anything else, I just want to know, what is this model? What are people supposed to react to and interpret when the word regression is brought up with players in fantasy football and points scored?
So regression is a big math fancy term, but basically it's like in a smaller sample, things can get wonky, but over the long term, players are going to get back to the median of what they should be expected to score based off how close they are to the end zone, how close they are to the sideline, a bunch of different factors. My model, I figured out what matters, which doesn't, but this chart kind of gives you a good example. Like, there's a wider gap between how players can be underperforming or overperforming on the smaller sample. But as you get more targets, all the players start getting closer to this midline over here. So that's kind of an example of how regression works. Just using touchdowns and deep targets are the two primary things, because I want to be looking at, okay, touchdowns are important. A pass downfield is also important to fantasy, but it's crazy volatile. So I don't care about like rushing yards over expected, because like rushing yards not going to really move the needle all that much. But right. A player going from three touchdowns when he should have scored seven, all of a sudden, like that's a lot of fantasy points over the course of the season. So today we're going to look at the small sample things, touchdowns, deep targets, but they're also very valuable for fantasy. So we have to actually use a regression model to kind of figure this stuff out.
Yeah, Hayden has written three separate columns. You can check them out in the description down below, and receiving touchdowns for wide receiver / tight ends, rushing scores, and also deep target / deep catches. Just quickly, this model isn't on like an individual basis, right? It's basically it's comparing to the average, right? And we talk about all the time with these players, their different skill sets, their different archetypes. So some that might have outperformed others, that just might be because they're just better at football.
The model is trained to say this is what the average player in an average offense would score based off of the usage he gets. So like if he was thrown a target from the 4-yard line, how often would a average NFL player in average offense actually score a touchdown versus how many actually scored? Right. So we know, like, why I like using it this way is I know Tyreek Hill is going to outperform my model. George Kittle is going to outperform my model. And there's going to be other players. Deontay Johnson is always going to underperform my model. But even with that said, the elite players can go way beyond what they should have done, even contextualizing that they are very good. And then on the flip side, like there'll be some seasons where like Julio Jones didn't have any touchdowns. You're like, okay, maybe one of these years Julio Jones should have had 9 touchdowns. So like this stuff kind of evens out. We'll get to all of it.
Yeah. And I think the other goal here, because we're not the only show that talks about regression, obviously, is to maybe dive into some of those individual examples and talk through if it's actually beneficial to take that number on face value, because you'll be hearing it a lot this summer as reasons why or why not to take a player. And again, I think looking at it from an individual basis rather than just an at-large de facto value has some benefits to it as well. Okay. Why don't we start with receiving touchdowns for wide receivers? Very important, 6 points. You already outlined how you kind of come up with the expected touchdown number. So why don't we jump into maybe first the ones who like totally outperformed on this list. So names like Devontae Adams, Tyler Lockett, AJ Brown, Jahan Dotson, and Jalen Waddle. I mean, just looking at this, reading the table, Devontae Adams had 5 more touchdowns than expected.
Yeah, Davante Adams probably on average finishes with 2 to 3 more touchdowns than average. So I think that he's probably not going to score 14 touchdowns again. That's my model said he should have scored 8 right now. I think that's probably what we should be expecting. So last year's numbers will come down. And then on top of that, Derek Carr, is he going to be performing differently than what Jimmy G is this year as well? So the model is basically saying Davante Adams probably this year going to have 8 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns, which still makes him a wide receiver one. But is he going to be in the same group as like Cooper Kupp, for example? Probably not.
AJ Brown caught my attention on here. He scored 11 touchdowns last year. His expected touchdowns was at 7.1. And your reasoning stood out to me as well, because while he outperformed in that raw touchdown number, I would say the scenarios and the environments that he scored them in might actually work in our benefit here and change this year. Whereas the Eagles were so dominant last year and so run heavy at times that might have limited him to just, again, those 7 touchdown scored opportunities, yet he scored 11. So if this year, if the Eagles are worse or their opponents are just better and more competitive, that might actually equal itself out.
Perfect example of he wasn't playing some fourth quarters and there was so many goal line touchdowns that were based off of runs. If that flips at all, AJ Brown's expected touchdowns can go way through the roof. He's another player where he dunks on a model every single year. And I know that going on that. So you make adjustments after doing that. So I think that AJ Brown has as good of odds of any wide receiver to lead the position in receiving touchdowns this year. So that's part of him being very good. He's already supposed to score like in the 8. That's based off of the Eagles finishing at the 25th or whatever in pass attempts. If that's closer to 16th because the defense is worse, now we're really cooking.
Yeah, and I just think that that's the perfect example of how a regression model can say, hey, maybe your expectations should be lowered for AJ Brown. But then again, in this example, we're not taking exactly what happened in 2022 into 2023 because there are going to be changes unilaterally for that team.
Yep.
And he's just so good that, hey, just a higher throwing environment likely means that he probably eclipses or reaches the same number of touchdowns he scored last season.
Similar player, but somebody I actually have some concerns about, it would be like Jalen Waddle. So Jalen Waddle scored just as many fantasy points over expected as AJ Brown did. Jalen Waddle is very good. The difference is Jalen Waddle only had 4.4 expected touchdowns last year. He's going in the second round, like what, 12 picks after AJ Brown. That's a pretty wide gap that he has to overcome because the Dolphins just don't throw the ball in the red zone right as much as the Eagles will as well. So I think that's some of the contextual things where even though Jalen Waddle and AJ Brown look like they are at the same spot, I have more confidence that AJ Brown's going to get red zone looks compared to like Jalen Waddle.
And can we also scroll down to some of the stuff that you wrote on Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, who are the top two picks right now in best ball leagues over on Underdog Fantasy? I mean, Justin Jefferson scored 2.4 fewer touchdowns than expected on his usage last year. And the Ja'Marr Chase, you wrote that if he played all 17 regular season games, he was on pace for 11.6 expected scores.
Yeah, if I actually had to make a bet who's going to lead the NFL in receiving touchdowns this year, it would be Ja'Marr Chase. That's where he was on pace for. But it is shocking to see Justin Jefferson on the underperforming side of this. He had, what, like 184 targets or whatever it was, and he just didn't run that hot in touchdowns. Now, we'll get to the deep targets. He was running hot on the deep targets, which just makes it so confusing because usually
it's like a balancing act, right? Like some of the deep targets might go away, but then more touchdowns are scored, so then it levels itself out.
The model saying that Justin Jefferson's pretty good.
Yeah. I think that's one way of putting it. Okay, why don't we jump to the opposite end of here, the people who, quote-unquote, underperformed. And I don't know if you twisted the numbers, but there is Diontae Johnson, one of your favorite players. It is crazy. He scored 0 touchdowns last year, despite in your model, he should have had 6.7.
Negative 6.7 is a shocking number, even accounting for Diontae Johnson's kind of historic inefficiencies. He's also majorly positive regression candidate when it comes to the deep targets as well. And it's not even just like a Kenny Pickett or Steelers situation, because like George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth, they both performed well versus this stuff. Just Diontae was so bad last year. This is to me so obvious where let's say he's scored 7-8 touchdowns this next year. I wouldn't be completely shocked by that just because one, he's so due for positive regression, even though he's probably gonna be a below baseline player. But two, like the Steelers offense, they will just have more projected points this year than they did last year just because the offense is young. So Diontae Johnson right now, I have not been a fan of Diontae Johnson for the last couple of years. It's been an up and down roller coaster. This year I'm in. Like this price tag is like the wide receiver, like 36. everything is going up. Even if he had last year's numbers, which was shocking, he would still be like kind of in this range. Any positive regression for Deontay is going to be very welcomed.
Zero touchdowns is leaving a nasty taste in drafters' mouths right now. Ian pointed out that George Pickens on his own team and having like 20-something fewer targets once Kenny Pickett took over is going as wide receiver 36. Obviously, people expect a second-year breakout, yada, yada. Meanwhile, Deontay Johnson is going three wide receiver spots after, despite outperforming him. And again, throwing up here the theoretical 6.7 touchdowns scored last year at wide receiver 39. So three spots after. Again, I know one guy is all flash and not so much substance yet in George Pickens. And while Deontay Johnson can be frustrating, but man, it's pretty easy to believe that can be a value this year.
Yep. All in on Deontay.
All right. What about the rest of that list in terms of underperforming? Anyone else that you want to point out? Because like there are some random names in there, but then there's like Deebo Samuel, who the year before was like going crazy and completely broke your models, not just on red zone touchdowns, but also 20 plus yard plays. And then last year he actually underperformed it.
Yeah. Deebo is like the perfect person to kind of look at, like a good player that ran too hot the year previous. And then last year was way worse than what you would expect him to be. So he's another person where I was not buying the high cost after he ran hot last year, but I'm going to buy the dip on Deebo Samuel. The other name I kind of just want to throw out there is Tyler Lockett. He's been so dominant versus my model historically, but even last year was probably doing it a little bit too much. He had like four more touchdowns than what you would expect on his usage. Now throwing JSN his age, now you can start seeing where the efficiency stuff could actually fall out from underneath him this next season.
Before we move on from receiving touchdowns, do you want to touch on tight ends real quick?
Yep.
It's always fascinating to me when a great player scores almost exactly how many touchdowns they were expected to. And guess who's at the top of that list? It's Travis Kelce. 11.7 expected touchdowns. He scored 12. The name that stood out also is Cole Kmet, because Cole Kmet was, let's just say, from a competition environment last year in this cleanest situation, playing a ton of snaps, albeit maybe the Bears didn't throw a lot in the red zone towards the opening half of the season. But he's certainly not going to score 3.7 touchdowns over expectation again this year.
No, yeah, he was only supposed to score 3.3 of them. And a lot of them came in like a two-week sample. I would be very surprised if Cole Kmet had the same season as he had last year. It's not even just DJ Moore. It's Chase Claypool for a full season. And Robert Tonyan, I think, is going to mix in a little bit as well. And I don't think that Cole Kmet, just watching him, this is like where like watching plus doing the film or having a model makes sense. I don't see Cole Kmet as an above model player. So I think that the regression would come at him harder than it would for somebody like
Kittle,
like George Kittle. And but now I will say George Kittle had, he's supposed to score six. He scored 11. That's a lot. Like, we're,
to be fair, and it is funny, like in previous years, all five of them or six of them before, George Kittle's touchdowns were right about four or six every single year. And the last year he broke out for 11.
And my model would always say, like, he scored two fewer touchdowns than expected. And we knew that never made sense. George Kittle should be scoring touchdowns. So that'd be the concern with George Kittle this year, is he ran super pure on touchdowns, especially late in the season when it mattered most for these basketball tournaments. I would be surprised if George Kittle had 11 touchdowns. He probably has seven or something like that. And like, this is a perfect explanation with Travis Kelce. Like, Travis Kelce, like, he was just model average. He just was really good at earning those. So I don't think that George Kittle is light years better than Travis Kelce. So if the regression was working for Travis Kelce, I don't see why the regression wouldn't be coming for George Kittle a little bit.
Quickly, anyone on the opposite end of this? I know David Njoku performed under expectation. And we've already talked about on the tight end show on the five players you need to draft with Jared Smola that, I mean, he led all tight ends in the NFL with 28% of his team's red zone opportunities.
Yeah, Njoku and Freiermuth are both kind of on that tight end 1-2 border. Both of them performed over two touchdowns worse than what you would have expected. Some positive regression from them would get them closer to that, let's say, George Kittle, TJ Hockenson tier, where they're not that much different. It just touchdowns ran bad. I will say Tyler Higbee has been somebody that's gone all over the place historically with this. He's probably like an average starting tight end, somewhere about that. Tyler Higbee scored 3.7 fewer touchdowns than expected. He was actually almost supposed to score seven of them. Keep in mind, that is a Rams offense that was terrible late in the season. if Matthew Stafford, the offensive line, Cooper Kupp comes back, there's a chance that Tyler Higbee is going to get more just expected touchdowns because the offense is going to get better. So Tyler Higbee is one of these kind of late round guys, but I like Njoku, Freiermuth, and Higbee right now, partially because of the model.
I'm going to be someone from the YouTube comments right now and ask you a question. How can someone score 3.7 touchdowns?
Well, that's over time. It's going to be just like if this we did this for 5 years, it would be he would be about one difference. So, I mean, yeah, at 0.7, we can round if you guys want
it's
me to
average.
Round. Yeah, it's an average.
It's an average. Average. That's why it doesn't have to be just full numbers or whole numbers every single time. It's basically the question I'm asking.
Yes. And there's also a study on if you put too many decimal points, people's brains just go like, I don't see it. It's too much. So for those doing data stuff, don't put so many damn decimals. Like nobody cares. No one's saying like he should have scored 3.644 touchdowns. Like just keep it round.
Before we move any further, you know you can draft on Underdog Fantasy right now. It is the home of best ball. Still best ball mania 4 going strong. We've changed up this year, have more regular season prize pool money to make it an even more exciting and interesting game. If you've never played best ball, now's the time to do so. You can click the link in the description down below and we will match your first deposit up to $100. And maybe like the best way of doing it is just sit in one of these sit and goes, one of these like $5, $10 entries and just try it out for the first time. Because I know you are going to enjoy it once you do it once and you want to draft all summer long. Okay. Have you ever been on vacation after a long day of activities or sightseeing? You have a night in, room service, bathrobes, and television or movies. And when you're in a foreign country, you scroll Netflix or Hulu or whatever streaming service you have, and you realize that the library of content there is so much larger than it is in the United States. You start a new show, a new series, and when you get back home, you realize you now have to find that on a different service or pay for it in a different way. That is where Surfshark comes in. It's a VPN service that lets you virtually travel the world with a tap of a finger. You can go to Spain, Canada, Costa Rica to watch the content available in those countries. So you can try Surfshark today, totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/underdog or enter promo code underdog for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right, 3 extra months for free. That is surfshark.deals/underdog. Next up, why don't we do rushing touchdowns?
Let's do it.
Since we're on this 6-point kick, talk to me about some of the players at the top of the list in terms of reaching over expectation for touchdown score.
Yeah, so let's start at the very top. Like Jamal Williams was supposed to score 15.2 touchdowns because he had so many goal line opportunities. So he's somebody
17.
He scored 17. So he wasn't that crazy. Like he didn't like run so pure versus what he would what is supposed to score, but this is how regression could get you in trouble. He's not going to score 17 touchdowns because he's not going to get the same exact usage. So he got lucky in that stance. Austin Eckler scored the most touchdowns and had the most expected touchdowns last year because his role is so amazing. The person that actually overperformed the model was Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard scored almost 5 touchdowns more than what the model would have expected. Next up would be Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry. But Tony Pollard is somebody where, yes, the model thinks that he's going to regress a little bit, but his role is also going to change. So he's kind of like the inverse of Jamal Williams, where, yes, he ran a little pure versus what the model is expecting, but he's going to have more goal line opportunities because Zeke Elliott himself had 10.2 expected touchdowns. So if Tony Pollard gets some of Zeke's expected touchdowns, we're really talking about somebody that can have like a top 3 overall finish.
Yeah, let's dive into some of these individual players because I think that was more interesting on this column than the actual table was. Like you said, Tony Pollard is almost – it's not – like the conversation we had with AJ Brown earlier, but you can't just take the regression number at face value because again, the environment changes. It's not just a change in play caller and offensive coordinator. It's also just a total departure of the dude that has been living on short yardage rushing touchdowns in previous years. So like while the big plays might dip, he might just have more opportunities to go along with it and it might balance itself out or counteract.
I think Tony Pollard could be on pace for like an Austin Eckler type of role where Austin Eckler is not completely dunking on my model, but he's getting the best usage possible. That's what the Cowboys offense could provide.
And the other one here I wanted to discuss was Nick Chubb as well, because he scored 3.4 over his expectation. And as you wrote, like it's different this year because Kareem Hunt is no longer on the roster, and Kareem Hunt had around 7 expected touchdowns last season. So
more than I would have guessed, right?
Right. Way more, because we all thought Kareem Hunt stunk last year and the Browns agreed. And so just departing those opportunities and giving them over to Nick Chubb again is going to help balance itself out. And again, is one reason why you and I absolutely love where he's going on Underdog right now.
Yeah, Nick Chubb's such a layup in the second round. Like I still truly cannot believe that he's going where he is.
He's basically locked into top 5 touchdown scored at the position if he stays healthy.
Yeah. And there'd be a
that's
chance.
Pretty simple.
And this could be the year where he scores 22 and next is like at 15. Like this could be a total asking. Nick Chubb's full Chubb this year.
Yeah. And Nick Chubb again right now is going, gosh, I have to scroll down, 21st overall. That's after like that string of running back or quarterbacks, I should say, and who we just talked about in Jalen Waddle as well. I would wager that Nick Chubb is going to score a bunch more touchdowns this year than Jalen Waddle.
It's going to be like 16.
Yeah. Can we talk about Travis Etienne as well? Because Etienne scored 5.6 fewer touchdowns than expected last season. That was the worst mark among all running backs last season by a pretty considerable margin.
Yeah, it really was a disappointing season in that regard. And you kind of look at this either way, where he will score more touchdowns this next year, just point blank period. That's how regression works. But it's also, this is evidence of why the Jaguars this entire offseason were going out of their way to try to find a power complement. They ended up having that in Tank Bigsby. So I would not be surprised if Travis Etienne has a borderline RB1 finish, but Tank Bigsby gets mixed in at the goal line a couple more times over the course of the season than you expect. I think Etienne's okay at his price tag. I'm not like super excited to draft him there, but I think that's where I would be valuing him.
It felt like the Jaguars were forced to use Travis Etienne in ways last year they didn't want to long-term, in terms of giving him, you know, 22 or 26 opportunities in games, and especially near the goal line. And like you said, I think they looked for maybe an archetype or a size or a prototype to complement that. A couple more single players I wanted to focus in on. Najee Harris, because as you wrote, it didn't feel like it, but Najee was the running back 6 in expected touchdowns last year. He certainly didn't get to that mark, but maybe he will this year based on just improvements to the offense in general.
Yeah, that it's super interesting because he's getting the work down there, and it's just more work than you would expect him to get because the Steelers were so bad. So it's like kind of the same thing with the Deontay Johnson conversation. They're going to get down there in that area more often. So touchdowns, there will be more touchdowns scored by the Pittsburgh Steelers, or all hell is broken loose there. And I think that Najee Harris, while Jalen Warren does mix in a little bit, Jalen Warren was also one of the very worst in goal line situations last year. So I keep hearing this rhetoric that Jalen Warren's going to like take too many snaps away from Najee Harris. I mean, come on. Like, that was never supposed to happen. Najee is a first round pick. They're going to keep him in that spot.
Two more. Joe Mixon. He scored actually basically 4 fewer touchdowns than expected last year, despite having the 3rd most expected touchdowns. Right now, he's in this really weird, I'm not going to say predicament, but in drafts, he's still out there so freaking late. And that's not even factoring in Samaje Perine and his 5 expected touchdowns scored last season. Like, again, with how the Bengals have operated this offseason, I'd be shocked if Joe Mixon isn't their top and same running back as he was last year, and we aren't drafting him anywhere close to that.
Mixon's like the ADP that makes no sense to me. At this point, we should assume that the Bengals are going to keep him. They're not going to bring in any true competition around him. And he has a double slingshot effect that you said. He scored 4 fewer touchdowns than what the model said based off his usage last year. His usage is going to go up because Samaje Perine also had a bunch of projected scores himself. So he can go from 9, which he had last year, back into the 15-16 range because of regression and competition. So Joe Mixon, there is some risk obviously associated with him, but there could be a double slingshot effect. And Joe Mixon has run very hot in touchdowns previously, so it's not that shocking.
Right now, Mixon, again, an underdog. Right now, this is how the people are drafting him as running back 19, 62 overall. Gosh. That's after J.K. Dobbins at running back 18 and 56 overall, and just ahead of Damian Pierce, one spot ahead. We'll finish out this running back talk and touchdown talk with Alexander Mattison, because while Joe Mixon seems like he is firmly in the plans of the Bengals, reading between the tea leaves and the lines, it doesn't sound like that is the case with Dalvin Cook in his future with Minnesota. So what should that mean for someone like Alexander Mattison?
if you combine Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison's expected touchdowns, it would be at 16.7. That's because the Vikings offense is very good. So unless
that's a lot of touchdowns that unless you think are Dwayne unaccounted
McBride,
for.
Yeah, Dwayne McBride or Ty Chandler or your boy Kenne are going to score more touchdowns. I don't know, man. Alexander Mattison, aside from Joe Mixon, seems like an absolute smash at his ADP.
Yeah, and that ADP right now is running back 28, 86 overall. And ladies and gentlemen, this is why you should be drafting on Underdog Fantasy and in best ball right now. Did I mention the link is in the description down below? Okay. Should we close out with deep targets? These are the fun plays that everyone loves. I don't have too many notes on this. Where do you want to start? Because, I mean, Justin Jefferson, as we talked about, ran pure here, ran hot, but not so much on touchdowns. Tyreek Hill, I didn't see like the same number of like huge, massive, big plays of 40 plus yards like we saw the Kansas City Chiefs, but he had a lot of like 20, 21, 22 yard catches last season. So at least in that regard, that isn't going to change his standing in this model.
Yeah, it was just nice to see that he was only behind Davante Adams in the amount of deep targets he had, despite Tua's arm being fractional of what Mahomes is. It's just a usage thing. They ran so many skinny posts with him that he was so deadly on them. The two or three kind of names that really stuck out to me is, once again, Diontae Johnson was well below expectations on these. We don't have to get into that conversation, but it's the Kyle Pitts one. Like, he had 19 deep targets. He caught three of them last year. That's basically as bad as you could possibly get. And we know that Kyle Pitts, with an average quarterback, would probably be an above average player. So if we get any regression there, things can completely change his outlook.
Yeah. And for you, that's 15 plus air yards. And even if you look at just 20 plus air yards, he caught one of 14. And that isn't an individual talent. Like, when you look at above the line in the green zone, you see really good football players. And that just makes sense that they're outperforming average. Again, in Tyreek Hill, in Justin Jefferson, in CeeDee Lamb, and Stephon Diggs, and Mike Evans. I can keep going down the list. But then you see someone as talented as Kyle Pitts, and heck, I'll even say it, Brandon Ayuk, you know, like at the underperforming stuff, that's quarterback related, I believe.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Brandon Ayuk's one of these players where this can get so fluky where he's all of a sudden over this overperforming section next year, and all of a sudden now his yards per route run has gone crazy. The other last name real quick on just yards per route run, and this is where the stat is meaningful, but people kind of take small samples and extrapolate this too far. Rashid Shaheed, he caught 8 of his 10 deep targets last year. 8 out of 10. The average is closer to like around 46%. So when we do all these yards per route run numbers and Rashid Shaheed is looks like Julio Jones, it's because he ran very pure on these deep targets. That's just not going to hold up this year. So that's like kind of the buyer beware in a small sample of some of these players. Like, the first two places to look on the yards per route run outliers is deep passes to where they could just catching a bunch of them, or was their yards after the catch insane because there's one missed tackle and all of a sudden he's off and running. So that's just like a buyer beware on Rashid Shaheed. Love him as a little player, but like, these small samples will kill me sometimes.
Diontae is also on this list as underperforming. The box just keep on getting checked. And yeah, that is the smallest sample you could ever look at with Rashid Shaheed. And as you pointed out, he finished with a plus 39 completion percentage over expectation on those deep passes. So yes, while he's like a role player, I don't know if we should make him anything more than that at this time until we have a larger sample size.
One thing, since you are a Panthers fan here, Panthers analyst, I'll give you some credible middle ground that DJ Moore, he was top 10 in the amount of deep targets he got last year. I don't think people would kind of guess that would have been the case because he was.
You know what? And not to cut in, but it's kind of how the offense evolved to, where they either ran the ball or they did play action off of it and kind of threw deep, or they hit like that RPO pass to the flat to LaVisca Chenault. And that was like kind of what the offense evolved into.
Are you worried that he's not going to be top 10 in this metric? Because I think that it's a safe assumption that he's not going to score that many touchdowns because Justin Fields probably going to throw 20-ish of them most likely. Yeah. So he needs to hit on these. I'm a little bit nervous that like, he was already top 10 last year and he was like, what, a wide receiver 3 at best? And I'm not sure if like the environment has changed all that much. And I'm actually worried that DJ Moore could finish with 35 deep targets instead of closer to 50.
I'm having really difficult time projecting what DJ Moore is going to look like in that offense, and by how he is being drafted, people are having a far less difficult time, if that makes sense.
Correct.
They seem much more confident in his ability to translate and be a wide receiver 2/3 and that offense just overall across the NFL when we talk about fantasy football. And I'm not sure if, again, I have full confidence to draft him over some of the other names that are being drafted around him.
Yep. Last name, Gabe Davis, was also like top 12. Just kind of crazy how his role is. He had so many deep targets last year. He's just, I don't know. What a weird player.
Interesting. All right. I think that's going to do it. Hopefully this was effective. Hopefully it was informative. Again, just looking at a term and a word and a model and saying, oh, we have to hold this over your heads, and this means they aren't going to produce like they did this previous year, or they just got unlucky. I think, as Hayden said, using that while also watching the games and understanding who the players are in the offensive environments that they're in is where maybe the magic happens and where maybe where the answers lie. And Hayden, again, attempted to do that in his three columns listed down below.
And I definitely did a better job writing about this stuff than speaking about it. So go read if you guys remember how to do that.
All right. Go and check out, again, the five players Jared Smola cannot stop drafting. We've also done our tight end tiers this week. And next week, we're going to do some second-year breakouts at both wide receiver and running back. For Hayden, I am Josh. Up the Villa, everyone. We'll talk to y'all soon. See ya.